And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Mantra Meditation Hour on CITR 101.9 FM with your congenial host, Raghunath.
You're listening to Mantra on CITR Radio 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is Raghunath. I'll be here for the next hour with various mantra-based music, kirtan. Today is going to be a first part of a special presentation on the Whistler Wanderlust Yoga Music Festival, which happened a couple of weeks ago. Here in the Vancouver area, a couple of hours outside of Vancouver at Whistler Mountain. The first thing we're going to get to is DJ Drez, originally from the LA area. He's been putting out various groundbreaking releases for many years, including four Jata Beat releases, the most recent one entitled Lotus Memoirs. We had an opportunity to talk to DJ Drez at the festival after participating in a class where he was providing the music, which was really mind-blowing experience, to say the least. The first track that we're actually going to hear is from Lotus Memoirs, entitled Nectar Drop. And in with that, I'm going to mix in the first part of the interview where he's talking about just his journey and starting out with musically producing and playing hip hop, and then how that connected with his spiritual practice, then how it all kind of became one thing. And then he talks a little bit about the meaning of jata. If you'd like to give us a call, you can do so 604-822-2487 during the show. I hope you're doing good. Here's DJ Drez with Nectar Drop and the first part of the interview from the Whistler Wanderlust Festival a couple of weekends ago. You're listening to Mantra on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
I've very much been on a spiritual path since I was pretty young. And I was 14 or 15 with just pictures of Rastas and Sadhus on my wall. And I didn't know about the Sadhu Yogi link. I didn't know that the Sadhu was the Yogi and the Yogi was the Sadhu. Like, not always, but, you know, many times. And so I started my yoga practice, and I never meant to join the two worlds of DJing and yoga. And because my practice was just, my yoga practice was very serious, and it was very personal and inward, and I left my ego at the door, whereas hip-hop ego plays a part. It plays a part in just the survival of, you know. So even though I had already come out with my first Jata Beat album, but the idea was to put beats to Indian music. And one day I was DJing, I was practicing yoga at a class, and I envisioned myself at the front, sitting down, playing music for the class. And I think within a month or two, I was playing for a class, and that's how it began. Yeah.
So, what is the Jata Beat? What does that mean? How do you break that down?
Jata. All right. So Jata is what the Sadhus call their locks. It's J-A-T-T-A. I spell Jata, J-H-T-A. As in, because I kind of grew up Rasta. So Jata. And there's always been, in Rasta, there's a big lion presence, because the Lion of Judah and things of that nature. And Jata, in a Ghanaian language, I can't remember which one or which dialect, Jata means lion. So it was kind of joining the two huge spiritual influences of my life together, and which is Rasta and Hinduism, and Buddhism as well. I mean, they there's certain Tibetan yogis who are in the hills and they grow their locks and that whole thing. So, Jata Beat, you know.
And there's a lot of similarities between, like, you look at Rasta culture and you look at Bhakti culture.
Mm-hmm. Very, very similar. Chanting, you know, dreadlock guys chanting and meditating in the hills. That's the roots of both. Very much so.
Thank you. Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
With the vast amount of changes happening in the world, it's almost impossible to get a clear picture of what's really going on.
We are trapped within the logic of capitalism, leaving us unable to imagine what comes next.
The Extra Environmentalist brings the perspectives of people who can see the whole picture and are ready for whatever comes our way.
Tune in to the Extra Environmentalist every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
This is the viewpoint that makes all places the same to you.
You're listening to Mantra on CITR Radio in Vancouver. Currently in the midst of a special presentation, first part of a special presentation on the Wanderlust Whistler Yoga and Music Festival a couple of weekends ago. We just heard from DJ Drez with a snippet of an interview, first part of an interview, and the track Nectar Drop, followed by Krishna's dub, both from Lotus Memoirs, the most recent release by him. With a bit more of the interview coming up, three more parts. And then we're also going to hear another track from Lotus Memoirs entitled Drada Doman. Later on in the show, you're going to hear from also Tina James of Jiva Mukti Yoga and one of the organizers, Skylar Grant. We're going to hear a little bit from her also, as well as some music by Craig Colan and Rada Avis, who we're also listening to now, and some music by Steve Gold. So here's the next segment of the DJ Drez interview.
The way I understand it, in India, if you speak of yoga, people are thinking more of bhakti yoga. And the asana is that's there, but that's like less important. And So the role is huge. In the West, as you know, like, it's the postures, it's the asana that is really big. Mm. Yoga is not that popular. Mm. It's the asana. Mm. And so I think the role of chanting is very important, whether it's simply chanting Om in the beginning of a class, acknowledging that sound is a part of this culture and chanting, or if it's, you know, a mantra, even if it's an English mantra. Sanskrit mantras are very important because they're so vibrational. Mm-hmm. And it's said, and I believe it to be so, is that the word, even the way it's written, carries the vibration of the meaning. Mm-hmm. And so it's as much important as proper alignment of someone's sun salutations or their warrior poses, to learn the mantras and pronounce them correctly. Going back to Rasta, I've never smoked anything in my life or taken a drink of anything, and it's just the way it is. It's no judgment for anyone who does, it's just my path. But I know many people where the smoking of ganja, which comes from the Ganges, and that, you know, there's another connection between the two. But the smoking of ganja, or just liking reggae music, open the doors to so many people, open the doors spiritually to many people. And that's what the asana is doing. The asana is, some people, I've seen people who are just type A people who want to come in, they want to get their workout, they want to get out of there. Turns out they like yoga, but they're just there for the asana. They don't want to, they're not interested in the chanting. They think it's, in the West, people see, you know, people think, oh, the chanting and all that type of stuff is for hippies and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'll watch people in, within a couple months or a year, or, you know, they start to experience the fruits of peace. And they start to om as loud as anyone, and then they might start singing something, you know, like they'll start singing along. And, you know, it's really amazing. I've seen it happen where they're tight-lipped in the beginning and looking around, not closing their eyes, won't close their eyes during Shavasana. All these things. But the peace is undeniable, you know. The depths of yoga is so much deeper than these festivals, you know. It's the depth of relearning to breathe and relearning to walk and relearning to connect to being human, like being here on Earth, and like, you know. So it starts as this thing, as let's move our bodies and sweat and kind of party together. But I think for many people, it becomes this deep thing. Mm-hmm. So on the surface, I could look at it and say, oh, you know, it's cool, it's fun, but it's not yoga. I could say that. One day I might. You pick a certain day, I might say that. Another day, I might say what I'm saying today, where it is the gateway to experiencing the depth, the true yoga, the, you know, the peace.
And that's its job, is to take people.
That's yoga's job?
Yeah.
That's yoga's job, the point of samadhi. It's, you know, all the strength, the external strength and the internal strength, the balance, it's a byproduct.
From Lotus Memoirs, and some pieces of interviews with him from the Whistler Wanderlust Festival a couple of weeks ago. Next up, we're going to hear from Tina James, who started her spiritual path in the originally from England in the 80s. I believe she went to India, connected with her original teachers. And then later in the United States at Jiva Mukti Yoga, connecting with Sharon Gannon and David Life. And then teaching for many years now in Whistler. She resides and is the director at Loka Yoga. A few different segments from her. I had an opportunity to sit in the park one day, the Olympic Park there in Whistler, and in the sunshine, have a nice chat about the festival and the people and chanting and yoga. Here's Tina James.
In some way, there's an aspect to mantra which is like that. It's actually setting some kind of intention or revealing some kind of inner direction for the practice.
Yes. I think with Sanskrit, you definitely have to let the people know what it is they're chanting. I think it's very important that when you give somebody a prayer or something from the Vedas or you use an ancient mantra, that you don't just chant it parrot-fashioned, which has no meaning. So I think that that's where the Bhakti yogis are wonderful at bringing in what each word means in its translation, transliteration, so that people can think about it and then really, do I really want to chant that? Is that going to resonate with me? So I think that that's very important, that side of it. There are three points that apparently make a good teacher that Sharon Gannon shared with us, and that was to do your own practice diligently. The minute you stop your own practice, you can't teach. The second is to have a lineage, but not just have them in name, actually really believe in their humanness, everything about them. What, like, you have to really, you would travel the ends of the world to be with them. You believe in them so entirely that you give yourself up to them, but not in a kind of cultish way, in a way that you really respect their teachings because you know where they're coming from. And that's important. And that, you need to travel to find that being. And it's not always a human. Sometimes it could be an animal, it could be a bear, it could be something will connect you to that teacher, and that's it. And some people have found it's been bears, you know, the medicine women here, that's usually what happens. And then the last one is to love your students, who of course are ultimately your teachers. So I think when you really feel that, you can't go wrong. And the lineage to me is, it has to be there. I think if you can't revere your teachers and talk about them in your classes, live with them every day, I don't know. I don't know how I would be able to do that, to be honest. And that's not to say my parents are on my altar and, you know, I have special pictures of people, like Mother Teresa is someone who I really, really admire. So for everyone it's different. You have to have the yamas and the niyamas in your everyday practice. It's said that Gandhi himself practiced the first two yamas, ahimsa and satya. And he said, I'm doing my best to practice the other yamas. That to me sums up how difficult this practice is. This is not something that comes lightly, and it does take perhaps many lifetimes. But if you don't put it out there and have something to really understand, then your practice, you won't be going in the direction you want to go. If you want to fast track your spiritual progress, then I think the yamas and the niyamas are essential. Obviously, the yamas are the external moral codes, and the niyamas are the internal moral codes, which is where some people get muddled up with ahimsa, because they talk about it, you know, as us not harming ourselves. But it has to be, really, that we have to understand that when we're on our mat, when we're chanting, when we're practicing mudra, when we're practicing pranayama, to me, if I've eaten something and it doesn't resonate with me, the pain and suffering, I can't do that practice. I just can't. And that's just something that over the years has come to me, and it comes to everyone at some stage, I think. Yeah. Which is why at these festivals I would like to see a meatless festival. I would. Yeah. And I understand, because I think even if you did a meatless day, that's a start.
Yeah.
I mean, we've tried to do that here in Whistler. We have meatless Mondays. And many people who are my friends who do eat a lot of meat, they really like that. They said this just helps us feel less alienated. Yeah. And it is. It's all about consciousness.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I think Wanderlust, you know, I hope they come back next year. And these type of festivals, I think, bring a higher level of consciousness.
That's what they were talking about.
Yeah, it really...
It attracts a crowd that is actually...
It does. And when you get that many people together, that force is unmovable. Mm-hmm. Whereas if it's just you and I, you know, a few people might be inspired, perhaps, by some of our words, but... You know, like last night, the amount of people that were here and just hearing those words, even people, you don't have to practice asana, but even if you can just hear these ancient words and just, wow, what does that mean? You know, I love the idea of like non-stealing, you know, being truthful, non-hoarding. They're all things that really we could all tidy up, you know, directing the sexual energy in the correct way, like that's something all of us could tidy that part up, Brahma Macharya. So I think in a way, in their normal beautiful, each individual has an opportunity to perhaps look into that, which might not come straight away, but it does after you. That's the beauty of asana.
Yeah.
It wants people to go deeper.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me the other day, they said, you know, do you think the Westerners, that's all they want to do is practice asana? And I said, do you know what? The one thing Manju once told me was, he said, I really admire Western people. When I was with my father, he said, I so wanted to see more Indian women practicing. But of course, it wasn't really the way that the caste works, and it was mostly men. And, you know, he said, to see Western women so diligently and tenaciously practicing, and to see people over in the West creating such huge awareness here, is such a wonderful thing. Music is so important with these festivals. To be honest, I don't think you can just have a festival without music. It doesn't seem to have a beating heart if you haven't got that element. I can see people, just their hearts are open, and they just, whether it's First Nations chanting, Sanskrit chanting, English, French, Japanese, whatever language it is, if you chant Om Shanti Shanti Shanti, or you chant it in Japanese, Heiwa Heiwa, it's an amazing thing. Because then you see that everyone is connected, and it's beautiful. Yeah,
you see, like if you go to India, like so you go into the temples, you may catch somebody just sitting there and they're singing, either in a local language or in Sanskrit, just like just prayers.
Yes.
And there's like so much emotion in there, and
so much.
Music is just, it is definitely like, it's a tool that's being used to all traditions for us to actually as a community to come together. And when that chanting is centered around really higher principles, and
I think that's it, isn't it? It's the intention that it comes from. Which is why when you move with an unconscious breath, that's when people get injured. And when you move unconsciously, it's a completely different practice. You know, it's kind of like a physical workout. But I think when you move with an intention, breath linked with that intention, the movement becomes effortless. And to be honest, I guess it's the closest we might feel levitation occur, because you do feel like you're floating. And I've actually witnessed that in my own classes. I've looked at people and I'm like, wow, they are floating. And this morning I saw that with Sparrow when she was chanting. When you hear a sound and it just hits that sweet spot, you see people grow. And I think the trouble is, in the West, a lot of the time we've been made feel small and insignificant, like whatever we do doesn't make a difference or doesn't matter. And I think now people are waking up and they're realizing that everything they do matters, and that they can, you know, I know it's a cliche saying, but they can be the change they wish to see. And they're starting with themselves, and that's absolutely humbling to witness. It's beautiful.
Tina James from Jivamukti Yoga, Loka Yoga in Whistler. There's a few words. I'm going to hear from Craig Colin, Narara Vis, aka Shaman's Dream, with Durga Shakti. In this, you're also going to hear an interview with Skylar Grant, one of the organizers for Wonderless Festival. And then we're going to cap things off with a track by Steve Gold entitled Guide My Way. You listen to Mantra and CITR Radio in Vancouver, covering the first part of coverage of the Wonderless Festival in Whistler. Here's Craig Colin, Rara Vis, who also were at the festival participating with Durga Shakti. You're going to hear some chants in here and quickly give you a heads up. One thing you're going to hear is Sarva Swarupe, Sarva She, Sarva Shakti, Samanvite, Paye, Pyastra, Himo Devi, Durga Devi, Namostute. A little bit of an English translation offering to the goddess. You who are everything, you who are the life, in all things, you who are obsessed taking away the suffering of those who take refuge in you, to you, O Golden Mother, salutations.
We have a ton of teachers who come, and then we also have a ton of brand new people who are curious about yoga. They've just been doing a little bit at their gym, but they never would have gone to a meditation class or a pranayama class or a philosophy class. And then because it's here and it's accessible and you can't do three asana classes a day, so you've got to do something else, you might just try to do something that's a little boundary stretching or a little more esoteric. And then you might find your groove in a part of the practice, another limb of the eight limbs that you didn't even know was speaking to you, but you don't have to go out and find an ashram to do it. And so it feels like a light place to go deep, if that makes any sense. And we're really committed to asana is readily available in our culture. There's no shortage of the physical practice going on, and that's clearly the way that people get in. Mm-hmm. And it is the way. I mean, it's the way that almost everyone gets in. You start at the physical and you go through the layers of your body and your mind and your stuff. So there's, no question that the asana is the big hook. But the rest of it just gets bigger and bigger every year at every festival. And that's so satisfying, and it's so cool to see those classes fill up.
Yeah.
And because, ultimately, that's really where we all need to go, is like deeper in and also deeper out. Yeah. Deeper inside and then off of our mats with the yoga still intact.
Yeah.
Everybody speaks a different language. Everybody has a different way to connect both with themselves and connect with the world. And some people do that through real quietness and meditation. Some people do it through chanting, and some people do it through hiking and communing with nature. And some people do it in multitude of ways, and sometimes they don't even know what way is going to be their way in and their way out. And so you know, what we hope is to have a palette that's also led by some of the very best people we can possibly hire to give this experience, so that people are having, you know, they're not just dropping into some crummy meditation class. Yeah. You know, they're really getting something substantial, so that their first or second or 20th experience of something, or 200th, is really top notch. It definitely feels like it's a right place, right time, right effort thing. And that always, of course, feels good. It feels good when it feels like you're moving with the path of grace instead of the path of effort.
Yeah.
And, you know, I am in the blessed position of getting to do mostly the creative part of things. And Jeff and Sean and their team slog away literally, you know, 365 days a year for 10 to 12 hours a day to make four events happen. And it's just an insane amount of work. But at the same time, with that much effort and, you know, 20 staff people doing that all year long, to also then have the universe saying, yes, this is a good thing, and teachers coming out of the works and, like, coming and giving their love and time as well as their, you know, effort, is, it's, you know, hugely satisfying. I don't think we would have made it to year four, because it is so much work, and, you know, we're still struggling to make it make complete sense financially. But because there's so many, the rewards are so great in so many other ways, it does feel like it's rich and bountiful.
On Saturday, September 8th, join Vancouver Co-op Radio at the Wise Hall for our 100.5 FM Frequency Change Party. The Wise Hall and Lounge, located at 1882 Adenack Street, has a vintage performance hall upstairs and a cozy lounge bar downstairs. This night of live music, includes performances by Murray Porter, The O'Wells, and Jasper Sloan Yip. 2012 Juno Award winner Murray Porter tells the Aboriginal side of history with a mix of country, groovy blues rhythms, and humor. The O'Wells play a unique brand of energetic indie pop. They've been known to turn an apathetic concert goer into a regular 1930s swing kid. I spent all my sunny days. Jasper Sloan Yip's indie folk stylings tell the story of an introverted, existential East Vancouver musician. His tenor vibrato, breathless whisper, and soulful guitar exercise your heart and get your legs dancing.
But wander these streets with my head in my hands.
The Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM Frequency Change Party, Saturday, September 8th at the Wise Hall. For more information, please go to www.coopradio.org.
Word on the Street, Vancouver's annual festival celebrating reading and the printed word, is returning for its 18th year. At the downtown Library Square from Friday, September 28th to Sunday, September 30th, you can participate in workshops, check out hundreds of exhibitors, and see readings from acclaimed authors Annabelle Lyon, Kevin Chong, and William Patrick Kinsella. And be sure to become a member of the Vancouver Book and Magazine Fair Society for a chance to win a Word on the Street library, featuring a copy of nearly every book at the festival. For a full rundown of the schedule and authors, go to www.thewordonthestreet.ca.
We're back. Just to cap things off, we heard from some words from Tina James, track by Shaman's Dream titled Durga Shakti, and some words from Skylar Grant, one of the organizers for Wonderlust. Next week we're going to continue coverage of the Wonderlust Festival. We have another part featuring Krishna Das, interview with Krishna Das, an interview with Ryan Lear of One Yoga for the People, and some other interviews and music as well. So tune in next week for that. I should announce that tomorrow night, Friday in Vancouver, Give Peace a Chant. There's going to be a special Kirtan night as a food bank fundraiser. You can bring a non-perishable food item. Starts at 8 p.m. at Open Door Yoga, 16th and Arbutus. Go to givepeaceachant.org for more information about that. That's tomorrow night in Vancouver, Canada. And also on Saturday night in Chant, Mantra Meditation at Unity Yoga at 6 p.m. That's drop-in by donation. And you can go to Enchant, that's E-N-C-H-A-N-T, Kirtan, K-I-R-T-A-N.com, EnchantKirtan.com. It's at 10th and Commercial Drive in Vancouver, Unity Yoga, 6 p.m. This last track will be Steve Gold. I should mention as well that the Tribal Convergence is happening this week and weekend. Some of you may know about it. And last night I attended a part of the week-long sessions, workshops, and council, and some pretty amazing things coming out of that collective. And some other events coming up. One worth mentioning, Earth Dance will be happening on September 22nd here in Vancouver. More information about that on next week's show. Last track is going to be Steve Gold, who was part of Wonderlust Festival, with a track entitled Guide My Way, featuring the mantra Om Asatoma Satgayamaya Tamasoma Jyotir Gamaya Vrityoma Amritam Gamaya, which roughly translates to lead us from the unreal to the real, from darkness to light, from death to immortality. This is from the release entitled Let Your Heart Be Known. Thanks for tuning in tonight. I should say this afternoon. We'll be back next week, Thursday, 4 p.m., 5 p.m., for the next installment of the Wonderless Courage and the next installment of Mantra Radio. Go to mantraradio.co on the internet for more information, podcasts, our previous shows, and to send feedback. Till next week, take care of yourselves. Namaste. Here's Steve Gold.
Take us from darkness.